The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, these days, if you catch a train, everyone is on their phones. But in the old days, when you caught a train, everyone was on their papers. So I don't know what's different about that. But what has changed is these days, if you go to a party and no one's talking to you, you can just pull out your phone and pretend someone's talking to you. And now at dance parties, people aren't dancing anymore. It's just wall-to-wall of people on their phones. So we don't know how to dance anymore. And we don't know how to talk anymore. So we just shout at each other or we don't talk at all. So we don't know how to talk about important things, and we certainly don't know how to talk about God. But that's okay, because God talks to us. And in the Bible, one main way that God talks to us is by sending his son, Jesus. If you've been coming along, you know I've been using this photo I got off the internet. It's not Jesus. But I think if Jesus was around today, he would look just like that. Short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male, walking around the countryside of Palestine, speaking Aramaic. And in February, each week, we're looking at Jesus meeting someone different in the Bible, asking the question, what would Jesus say to this person? And what is Jesus saying to me today? And it comes in the form of a 20-minute talk from me now, followed by question and answer time from you guys. And today our question is, what would Jesus say to someone on the outside? And in the Bible reading we just had, Jesus meets a woman, and she's a complex character because she doesn't fit any neat category, and that's the point. She's Syrian, but to the Syrians, she's not Syrian enough. She's Lebanese, but to the Lebanese, she's not Lebanese enough. But to the Jews, she's a foreigner. And to them, she will never be a people of God. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to Jesus crying out, Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly. Jesus replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Yes, it is, Lord, she said. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Then Jesus said to her, wow, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. Now, this is a part of the Bible I just do not understand. I have three young boys, Toby, Cooper, and Jonty, high energy. So people ask me, how do you raise three boys? I say, it's easy. You just got to treat them like dogs. You just have to feed them and give them a ball to play with. And my Asian relatives are horrified. You cannot call your children dogs. That is such an insult. But hang on, Jesus has just called this woman a dog, and she's called herself a dog. What is going on? Well, to answer this, we need to hear the three things that Jesus says to this woman and the three things that Jesus is saying to us today. Number one, we belong to tribes. Jesus answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus saying, I'm of the tribe of Israel, and you're not. Richard Glover, Australian author, just came out last year with his book, The Land Before Avocado. And Richard Glover reminds us of the Australia of the 1960s and 70s. The Australia of the 1960s and 70s is the Australia I grew up in. And Richard Glover says, do you remember in the 60s and 70s, in Australia, you could smoke on a plane and train. Do you remember, in the 60s and 70s in Australia, we had no seatbelt laws. So if you came home from the hospital with your new baby, this was your baby seat. It was a cardboard box you put the kid in and then put that on the back seat with no seatbelt and drive home. And I would add, in the 60s and 70s in Australia, there were no Chinese. So my siblings and I, when we went to primary school, we were the only Asians in the whole school. And so that meant if you saw another Chinese person, you would go, you're Chinese, I'm Chinese and you would become best friends. You would cross a street to meet a Chinese person back then. Why? Because we form tribes. According to Henri Tajfel, sociologist, psychologist, in his famous social identity theory, as human beings, we will cluster in groups and form tribes around the most arbitrary, meaningless things. It could be, we have the same birthday. It could be, we have the same favourite colour. It could be, we're sitting on the left side of the room and they're sitting on the right side of the room, east side, west side. And that's why you start behaving like, you went to Sydney University, me too. You like sriracha sauce, me too. You drive a Jeep, me too. We're Jeep bros. And so you form tribes. Why? Because they give us status, standing, security, identity. But most importantly, according to Henri Tajfel, they give us esteem. Well, what's the problem with that? Well, number two, tribes will exclude us. Jesus replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. We are children and you are dogs. Tribes will find a way to exclude you. Now, I would never get fashion, and that's the point. Fashion excludes you. Fashion's like a joke that you're saying, I just don't get it. I'm not getting it. That's the point. You're not meant to get fashion. So fashion will say, hey, it's short shorts. Then it'll say, no, it's long shorts now. And then it says, nah, we're back to short shorts. And you think, oh man, I can't keep up. And that's the point. You're not meant to keep up. Someone explained, fashion is whatever your dad can't wear. And so the Levi 501s, the original, these were the it jeans, these were the cool jeans, until the dad started wearing them and ruined it for everyone else. So now we call them dad jeans. And so fashion had to invent the skinny jeans because no dad with a dad bod can pull off this look. And for 2019, the haircut to get is the faux hawk fade. Now look at it. Look what it's doing. It is maximizing the hair at the top of the head where your dad has no hair. And now it's shaving away the hair on the sides, the very bit where your dad has some hair. And your poor dad is going, oh man, I can't pull that look off. And you also need some stubble at the chin, so no Asian can pull this look off either. So fashion excludes you. And that's what tribes do. And tribes will exclude you in at least two ways. The first way tribes will exclude you is this. We demonize the other side. The original rugby league teams were all named after animals. The Sydney Roosters, the West Tigers, the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. And part of it is you feel tough as an animal. I'm a tiger. But it also lets you boo the other side. Boo the Bulldogs, boo the doggies. And you forget, you're booing a human being, a father with a family. And say, nah, you're a dog, you're a mongrel. You dehumanize the other side. Which is why Super Rugby just does not work. The Western Force, like what is that? It's so nebulous, it's abstract, it's here, it's not here. And even worse, the Waratahs. It's a flower. How can you play as a flower in a contact sport? You can't hate a flower, but you can't cheer a flower either. It just doesn't work. Tribes have to demonize the other. And so when Jesus calls his woman a dog, that's what tribes do. They demonize, dehumanize, and depersonalize the other side. And according to Henri Tajfel, we don't just form tribes. It's not just us and them. It becomes good versus evil. We're the saints and they're the sinners. It's no longer left side, right side, east side, west side. They are the bad people that we need to keep out and protect ourselves from. And so the latest Pew research shows that we in the West are now more divided than ever. We are now more polarized than we've ever been. It's left versus right, red versus blue, progressives versus conservatives. And this explains Brexit in the UK, Trump in the USA. And if you look at the eyes, you can see the hate, the fear. In other words, the other side isn't just wrong, the other side is evil. And that's what tribes do. They demonize and dehumanize the other side. But then tribes will also demand, number two, an impossible level of perfection from their own members. And so tribes will find a way to purge and witch hunt and get rid of their own members. I work one day a week as a doctor, and I work as a surgical assistant. I hold the leg for the surgeon while the surgeon operates. And people say, well, explain how that works. Well, this is how it works. Medicine is very hierarchical. So, you know those posters that say, not just a GP? Do you know why they say that? Because, buddy, you are just a GP. I cracked that joke at my own Chinese church the other day and no one laughed. Too many GPs in the audience, too close home. No, we're not just a GP. Yeah, you are. You're just a GP. But there's only one person lower than the GP, and that's me, the surgical assistant. Medicine's very hierarchical. And so medicine will say things like, you got to study hard in high school, get the marks you need to get into university, get a med school. Oh, but you know what? It should be Sydney University and not New South Wales University. Oh, you know what? You should be a specialist and not just a GP. Oh, you know what? You should be a surgeon and not just a specialist. Oh, you know what? You should be an orthopedic surgeon and not just a surgeon. Oh, you know what? You should be a knee surgeon and not just a hand surgeon. Oh, you know what? You need to be in a major teaching referral hospital in Sydney and not just a regional hospital. Oh, you know what? You should be in the Mayo Clinic, USA, and not just Sydney, Australia. You think, I would never be good enough to belong to the tribe of doctors. I belong to the tribe of Chinese, but for most Chinese, I will never be Chinese enough for them. I belong to the tribe of Aussies, but for most Aussies, I will never be Aussie enough for the Aussies. I have a friend, he played rep AFL, representative football, and he says after each game, people would say to him, good game, good game, good game. But he said to me, but I never once heard my dad say, good game, to me. I was never good enough for my dad. And just last year, I caught up with an old friend. She's a mother. She's raised three children to become adults. She supported her husband. She herself has a successful career. But she said to me, but I was never good enough for my mother-in-law. We can never be good enough for our own tribe. John Ronson, TED speaker, author, his recent book is John Ronson, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. He says tribes have their own system of justice, and they will use that to shun, shut you out, and shame you. And in this call-out culture today, we are only one poorly worded email or tweet or post away from being shut out, shamed, purged, and witch hunted out of our own tribe. So what's the solution? Well, number three, we can be united in Jesus. Jesus replied, it's not right to give the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Yes, it is, Lord, she said. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Then Jesus said to her, woman, well played. You have great faith. What's going on here? Well, which one of these do not belong? We have a grown-up, child, grown-up. We want to say the child doesn't belong because the other three are grown-ups. But as we know, in many countries in the world, they'll say, well, that's mum, that's dad, that's their child, so they belong together. This other bozo, we don't know who he is, so he doesn't belong. Or we have a hammer, an axe, a piece of wood, and a saw. Which one of these do not belong? We want to say the wood because the other three are tools. But we know in most countries, they'll say, you know what? The axe chops the wood. The saw saws the wood, so they belong together. The poor hammer, it belongs with nails, so it's left out. What's going on? Well, here we're grouping things not according to their properties, but we're grouping things according to their relationships. We have a child. We have a table of bread, and we have a dog. Which one does not belong? Well, they all belong together if they belong in the same house. And that's what the woman is saying. Jesus answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. But she calls his bluff and says, no, Jesus, you were sent to the lost. Because elsewhere, Jesus, I came to seek and save the lost. And I have a shared common humanity because I'm just as lost as any Israelite. And I need Jesus just as much as any Israelite. We have a shared common humanity. And Jonathan Haidt would agree. Jonathan Haidt is a liberal, secular, atheist, Jewish psychologist, professor in the USA. Just last year he came out with his book, The Coddling of the American Mind. And he says the reason why we're so polarized right now is we see the world as us versus them. And the line between good and evil is between us and them. But he says we need to stop thinking like that and see that them is us. And we're just as broken as each other. And he approvingly quotes of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who has the famous line, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was a prisoner in a Soviet Russian gulag where people starved to death, froze to death, and were beaten to death. And so it became us versus them, prisoners versus the prison guards, good, evil. And suddenly Alexander Solzhenitsyn has this moment where he goes, no, it's not us versus them. Them is us. We are just as broken, just as evil as each other. There is no difference. And we need Jesus just as much as each other. So what would Jesus say to the outsider? Today we've heard three things. Number one, as humans, we form tribes. Number two, tribes will exclude us. But number three, we can be united in Jesus, in a shared common humanity. Now, we have the movie The Sixth Sense, the movie The Fight Club, and the TV show Mr. Robot. No spoilers, but you will probably know that these movies are famous for having this reveal moment at the end where everything I thought was real is the opposite. What is up is down. What is real is imaginary. And what is alive is dead. And now the new way of seeing reality makes much more sense. We have two ways of understanding reality. The first way is the old way, the way we've been taught. And it's this. It's us versus them. Good versus evil. I'm the saint. They're the sinner. I'm okay. They're broken. I'm perfect and they're not. They're the problem. And God is obligated to love me just the way I am. But the problem with this way is it leads to self-righteousness, self-entitlement, and judgmentalism. And this is what leads to fights, factions, divisions, and polarizations. But there's a second way of understanding reality, a new way. And it's what the woman and Jesus share with us. And it's this. It's not us versus them. Them is us. I'm not okay. I'm broken. I'm not the saint. I'm a sinner. I'm not perfect. In fact, I am part of the problem. And that's okay. Because Jesus didn't come looking for perfect people. Jesus came looking for humble people. And if we can humble ourselves enough to say we have a shared common humanity where I am just as lost as anyone else and I need Jesus just as much as anyone else, we can be united in Jesus and we can all belong in the same household as Jesus.
While people are maybe still pondering or putting some words to their question, Sam, you said at the end, one of the things I observed is that Christians still have fights, factions, and are often polarised. Doesn't that undermine your argument that Jesus is the answer?
Because I think even Christians don't quite get what's going on here. So there's a vision at the end of the Bible in a book called Revelation where it talks about all the followers of Jesus around Jesus' throne, worshipping and praising him, but in their own tribes, languages, and people groups. Meaning Jesus says, you can follow me, but as who you are. So it's unity without uniformity, unity in diversity. And so you get to worship Jesus as an Asian. You don't have to become a white person to worship Jesus. You can worship Jesus as an African. You don't have to become a Latin American to worship Jesus. You get to worship Jesus in your culture. So right at the start, one of the early things the church had to work out was Jesus is Jewish. He spoke Aramaic. His followers were Jewish. The first church was Jewish. And then these Greeks start becoming Christians and they speak Greek and they don't have the Jewish customs or food laws. What do we do? And so they had to have a council, a conference, the Jerusalem Council, and they worked out, no, they can stay in their culture and follow Jesus. They don't have to become one of us. So unity in diversity without uniformity. And there's this amazing story in the Bible. Why is it there? And it talks about how the disciples catch another group of people using Jesus' name to perform miracles and healings, and they try to stop him because they're not like us. And Jesus says, No, they are using my name, they are of us, but they don't have to be like us. And I think Christians sometimes, just like Henri Tajfel says in social identity theory, we think they're not like us, so they can't be of us. Well, no, if we're worshipping and following the same Jesus, they are of us, but they don't have to become like us. So even Christians think, you know, if there's unity, there needs to be uniformity. But there doesn't have to be. And tribes do fantastic things. So we saw Henri Tajfel says tribes do two things. One, there's the bad side because they demonize the other. But if we can get over that and think best of the other, see that God has put some goodness, truth, beauty and wisdom in the other, think best of them rather than be threatened by them, look for their strengths. But at the same time, understand why we form tribes in the first place. And often it's for security, pooling of resources and economy of effort. And so that's why we do form tribes. Stephen Bidoff, Australian child psychologist, says the reason why it's so hard to raise children today is we're trying to do it as a nuclear family, when really you need to raise children in a tribe, in a village. It takes more than just a nuclear family to raise a child. So we do need tribes, but we need to use them for good and not for evil. And they're to help us have security, pooling resources, economy of effort, rather than use them to demonize the other. Yeah, so the question is, Jesus says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. So what is he doing there? Was it rhetorical? Was it something more? I think that Jesus is having a nudge-nudge, wink-wink, playfulness game with this woman. And the way that she banters back and forth means she's get it. She's not offended. She knows Jesus is doing some sort of verbal jousting with her. Because elsewhere, Jesus says, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. So he doesn't say only the lost of Israel. So she knows, and I think she calls him at his bluff. No, Jesus, I know your game. And so why would Jesus do this verbal jousting with her? I think because it's a way that suddenly he's made public something that could have been done, handled very privately. He could have healed, done the healing, the miracle, done what she wanted, but we wouldn't have this record for us today, 2,000 years later. But at the same time, it was a public teaching moment for the disciples and any other crowds who are around. And Jesus often does these public teaching moments. So one obvious example is that woman with a bleeding disease who would have been dirty, shameful in her culture. She sneaks up through the crowd, hopes no one notices, and then and touches Jesus and is clean, and Jesus stops. Who touched me? And the disciples say, everybody's touching you right now. No, I felt, and Jesus says, I felt healing power come out. So now the whole crowd hears that someone got healed, and then he stands there. And finally, the woman, it says, knowing she couldn't get away with this, had to come forward in front of everyone and describe what had happened. And then Jesus, in front of everyone, says, daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. So he publicly restores her, honors her, puts the shalom umbrella over her. So everyone knows she's healed, she's clean. And so I think it was a chance to make public what could have been a very private, non-eventful moment. It became a teaching moment.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.